acting is cheesy. The plot is stupid.
I'm sorry, the plot is bad.
That's a little opening. Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do,
do, do. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very serious edition of ARG Presents. And why is it serious, to Brent? I'll tell you why. Because unlike most weeks, this is a week entirely based in the realm of text, typing. This is something super serious. This isn't like your sprites. There's no inlaid bitmaps or ham modes. None of that crap. That's for suckers. Because this week, the Brent, we're talking about games that were entirely made in character text-based games. I'm talking ASCII. I'm talking PETSCII. I'm looking forward to it, the Brent. What do you think about the concept of making games solely with text?
This is a very interesting time in gaming. And it's kind of weird because, I mean, you started with your very simple graphics and then you actually went to the character stuff. And that was a very short period of gaming. And then...
Not that short.
No, I mean...
Like all the 70s and some of the 80s. That's not that short.
for games, I'm talking about amount produced. It was a very short time of gaming. And it went away because sprites and your 3D polygons, that kind of stuff came in.
Sprites, 3D polygons.
Same thing.
That's all the same. That's why we don't program.
And then character graphics started coming back. Big time.
Did they?
Yeah.
Example.
A lot of retro games dabbled in that character set stuff. Aaron, both of our games are from the 1910s or from the 2010s. So it's kind of odd that
the 1910s.
Wow.
You're an idiot.
That got you that.
I've heard people screw up and say stuff that's dumb, but the 1910s?
Well, that's the best thing I've ever heard. Because we were just talking about the 1970s.
Oh, man. There. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Alrighty then. So the 2010s.
You did it again.
A pretty big resurgence in that kind of graphics. They took it to the next level.
Yeah.
Have you seen the demos and the games really that have used ANSI art and character art to produce 3D images and have 3D games?
No, I don't think I've seen that.
It's really cool. Yeah, it's really impressive. I was almost going to go that route.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if that was in the spirit.
There's a route to go that. So there are games that are based on 3D ANSI art?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I could check that out. That sounds like another wheel piece right there. Well,
that's that boy. You're going down a really narrow road when you go down that road.
You know, I didn't think about ANSI being part of this deal, but I mean, I was, you know, coming from the BBS scene back in the day. It's funny, when we first got a computer, when we had our Coco back in the day, like, what did I have? We'd make pictures and we'd print them out, but they'd be made entirely of characters. You have like Spock or the Enterprise, crap like that. Even they had porn that was like that. And it would be entirely character based. And then you'd get on the web on the BBS and you'd have all the ANSI art.
Yes.
It's actually quite amazing what people could come up with these character based, the art that comes with that. I can't imagine what mindset you would get into to even do that stuff. It always baffles me.
Well, I think the reason why it started coming back so big was they had tools in place where you could have a picture, and they have these online right now. They have a picture, and you can one-click turn it into ANSI, turn it into character stuff.
Well, that's not the same.
No, I agree. So, and I was flipping through a lot of that stuff. I was looking at demo scenes because I really wanted something to put up for the video. And the demo scenes are, while it's super impressive, they've got a lot of 3D spinning stuff.
Yeah.
And, Doom and ANSI is really awesome.
Yeah.
I decided to go a little more confined to, like I said, I felt like I was overreaching the subject at hand. I wanted to stick it more to actual ANSI art that we think of when we think of gaming, retro gaming.
Well, I'll be the judge of that when it comes to your game.
Like I said, this was it was an interesting time when it started coming back and being popular, when you started getting all these tools and abilities. And now the scene has shifted more into old sprite-based games, that retro feel. You see a lot of new games coming with that kind of stuff. I think it's interesting how gaming has repeated itself. And I'm wondering if low poly count retro games is the next to hit the market, to really flood in.
I can't wait till we get to the part where we had the awkward, hideous first, like, walked in the 3D. Is that going to come back?
That's the low poly count. That's exactly what I just said.
Like, remember, like some of your god-awful, like, PlayStation 1 titles?
Yeah, low poly games.
But I mean, why would you want to redo those? Go back and look at those. They're god-awful.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They age well.
No, I'm wondering if that is going to be the next evolution of retro gaming, you know, people trying to redo the retro feel, because that was a large part of gaming. It wasn't, I agree. I don't think it was necessarily a good part. I think it was a stepping stone to get to more advanced 3D graphics. But I mean, everything is a stepping stone, right? Listen,
retro's hot right now. And so they're going to milk every aspect of this sucker. Yeah, milk it dry,
brother. They probably will.
We better get to the games before something else goes violently wrong, you know, in this thing. So we did take a look at a couple of these character-based games, your ass, your pesky, your antsies. Brent, who wants to lead the dance?
I'm definitely going to go first.
Okay, go ahead.
I was searching for retro games.
Good move.
That carry... ASCII art, because I really like ASCII art.
Yeah.
And I kept on getting modern hits. And the games that we know from that era that were very popular, we've actually already covered a ton of them. So my choices were to stick with something pseudo-retro or go with something we've already done. So I went with something pseudo-retro. And I came down between Dwarf Fortress and Candy Box. Uh-huh. And I went with Candy Box. Aaron, this is a game made in 2013 by a French developer who goes by the handle Anway, but his actual name is David Luch.
Amway?
Anway. No.
Sorry, carry on.
Finding stuff about this guy, impossible.
All right.
He was 19 when he programmed Candy Box. Did it in 2 months. 3 months later, he released the sequel, Candy Box 2.
Yeah.
Which really just took the previous idea and expanded on it. But I wanted to look at the original because I actually have a little bit of a connection to that. So I tried to find stuff about David because he's a very interesting character. You can tell by his games. Just he's got a very unique mindset and the way he programs and the way he displays stuff. And just to make this game at all, I could find nothing. And this game was a big deal. It got several mentions by stuff like PC World, the DICE Awards. He got brought up there, was nominated for that Casual Game of the Year. It was featured in PC Gamer. So something you should check out. And this is a web-based game. Anyone could go and play it right now. Just search for Candy Box, and it'll pop right up. And you play it in your browser. So when you start Candy Box, you're presented with a screen that just says save. You've got a little box that says save, which will allow you to save your progress. And it has a candy counter. And it's how many candies you've collected. And you don't know what's going on. It's a game that you have to watch develop. You have to give it a little bit of time to cook before the game starts opening up. And it's amazing how far the game opens. One of the first things that will happen is a little character image made in AntsyArt almost looks like Doctor Who. That's who I thought it looked like. Pops up, and he's a candy merchant. And he says, hey, do you want to buy a lollipop? So you can give him some of your candy and you get a lollipop. And this whole thing snowballs into a medieval fantasy RPG game that has spells, weapon upgrades. It has equipment. It has you adventuring, fighting goblins and zombies and necromancers and dragons. It has several different types of gameplay we're going to go into. And I haven't made it to the end of Candy Box. because you can't push the pace past a certain point. You get candy at a constant rate, and even though you can increase that rate, you can't just get a million candies, right? And you have to have candies because you use them as currency. So as you're going along, there are different types of gameplay. You can find a frog who asks you logic-based quiz things. It's a resource management game because there are ways to one-time upgrades. You have to choose which path you go down. You have to choose what object you want more of to double, but it's a one-time thing type of affair. You can add in items to your inventory, but it's a one-time type of affair. So you've got some management aspects there. And then you also do adventuring stuff where you are in Little Antsy Arts. Your character will run across the screen or down into the ocean or whatever, and you have to choose if you're going to cast spells or drink potions and it fights RPG style. You do damage, they do damage, and to travel to the end of these scenes. And when you get to the end of one scene, it unlocks the next scene. I thought this was a very clever use of ASCII arts, first of all, because it represents things very basically. It's usually just letters or symbols, but it gets the point across. Aaron, what did you think when you opened this up?
Well, like you mentioned, it comes up and there's nothing there, hardly. Yeah. And so I tinkered with it. And once I could see where I was going, I was like, okay, I see what I'm doing here. There is some ANSI art or some character art that I quite like.
Yeah.
The caves are well rendered. There's even simulate motion. There are some wide scenes of stuff running around, going across plains.
Mm-hmm, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. And it opens in a clever way. It gives you, like I said, you don't know what you're doing. So if there's one of the aspects of the game, you can just throw candy on the floor.
Yeah.
And when you throw enough candy on the floor, the stuff will happen, you know, and then you can throw more candy on the floor, more stuff happens. But there's one thing I noticed is a lot of these things, they do have a top limit to where you are at some point, nothing else happens.
It's yes.
Nothing else I can see. Not like the lollipop guard. I think I planned as many as I could get it to produce. There's some other stuff. So here's the thing about this game. I think it looks nice. It's pretty clever. You picked a game a couple months ago called Candy Clicker.
Right? Cookie Clicker.
Cookie Clicker.
Yeah.
Cookie Clicker. And Cookie Clicker, I played the crap out of that game obsessively until one day I was sitting there feverishly playing. I'm like, what am I doing? And then I closed the tab and never played it again.
Uh-huh.
So by the time I got to this game, I was done with these games.
Well, this is a completely different game.
It is and it's not.
No,
sitting around waiting for stuff to add up. You're building up your ability to produce candy. This is a little more expansive, but what it's going for.
This is way more interactive.
Well, I'm just saying though, but you're still waiting around. You're sitting there waiting for candy to click up. You know, in case you'll do a mission. I hit the wall in these games. I'll be honest with you. I think this game's clever. I'm not panning the game by any stretch of the imagination. It's an Aaron issue. You know, but after that Cookie Clicker, and thank God, one thing you don't have to do in this is sit there and click. Thank God. They'll give it that. It'll just do it automatically, right? And I had candy alligators. But another problem I've got with this thing is, like, you have no idea what's happening. So you have no idea what's happening.
Well,
that's not always a good thing.
I think
a certain amount of guidance as to what I'm supposed to be doing.
Now, I think it works for this game.
There's an end that I don't know. And so if I don't know what the end is, why do I care? Like, if there's an objective I don't know about, why do I even care about it? The answer is I didn't. I didn't care about it. I just roamed around having adventures, sort of, you know, in this smallish world. Why I accumulated lollipops and chocolate bars and suckers. It was like the art was good. I thought it was clever game. But I mean, I've hit the wall on these sit around and wait for crap to accumulate games.
See, here's your problem, man.
All right.
First of all, Cookie Clicker and Cookie Clicker is amazing. I'm still running it at work. It's fun to see numbers get bigger. It's the little tingles in your brain.
Yeah.
But Cookie Clicker is something you pull up for 30 seconds. You make some, once you get so far, you make some adjustments, and then you just let it run. This game is not like that. This game, yeah, you can set it, you can let it run for hours and hours and hours and get a bunch of candy, right? But once you get that candy, the currency, you are unlocking stuff. And everything builds. It's not like paper clips where you build one thing that builds another thing that builds another thing. And I like paper clips, but this isn't like that. This game, when you have the candy available, the currency available, you actually unlock events, things. Your goal is to get through all of the questing things. I'm guessing you never got even close to the castle or the dragon or anything like that, right?
Well, I fought stuff. I went all the way through the caves. I had my guard. I got the windmill, and I got special weapons and armor. And I mean, I played it for a good while. But here's something else. Like, you were like, you're going to start on this today because you announced it on Thursday. Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, I don't necessarily want to play a game that stretches over the next 300 days. I want something I can play. I want to play the game now. I don't want to, like, wait around. I want to play.
I understand that. And I understand that. I'm not downing you for not liking the game. Okay? That's fine.
I don't hate it. I'm saying I didn't do it.
But this is a game, for me, that I like seeing the new art. I like seeing the new gameplay elements that they're going to introduce. I like not being spoiled. I like getting a new aspect of a game and not knowing what it does and trying to figure it out. And this is the most no-pressure game that allows me to do that while still having, when the action heats up, when you're in an action scene, which you voluntarily go into, the action scenes are really intense. You really have to plan out when to use a spell, when to use a potion. You're summoning, you know, clones of yourself. You're summoning imps. You're causing earthquakes, acid rain, all these effects. And it, first of all, it's visually appealing, even though it's simple. And secondly, it's exciting. I would get almost to the end of the scene because your little character runs from left to right, and you have to make it to the edge of the screen while monsters or whatever are coming at you. And I found that exciting because you see where you are and you see where you need to go. And it's about casting the spells in the right time and using the potions at the right time to get there. And when you get real close and you die, it's maddening. So there were some scenes I did dozens of times to try to get past, because every time you get past the scene, for the most part, you get a new item which unlocks a new place or a new ability. I had a lot of fun with this. It's still running at work. I can't wait to get back to fiddle with the new things that I've gotten. I understand this isn't going to be for everyone. I guess more on the topic, Aaron, of the ANSI art you saw, and I'm guessing you didn't see much. Did you see the frog?
Yes, because I answered trivia questions.
And the little frog, the little animation of him jumping and getting closer, I thought that was really well done. It was very simple, but it was really well done. And I thought all of the ANSI art in this was really well done.
I thought the art was fine. You know, games like this, though, remember those, something like Tamagotchis or whatever? Yes. Remember that, you know that crap where you're like, every day you gotta feed the thing, and you spend a few minutes with it? This is the kind of game that for geeks that like that crap, where you just like, you're right. And cookie cooker the same way. I'd come back and be like, oh, look at all my cookies. I'm going to spin it real quick, like, and then I'd be done. I'd come back later.
Right.
You know, and I did that. That's the thing. It got me for a while. It's like playing Farmville or something.
No, it's not like
Farmville. No, I'm not talking about the gameplay. I'm talking about the hook.
Okay.
And then one day you just realize, like, what am I doing? You know, and I was just reading Paul Kitchen saying he's still playing. He just played 5 minutes ago. Yeah. When did we do that episode? You know, months ago?
It's been a while.
I don't know if he was playing before that, but I mean, it's been like months, right? And you're still playing it. I just can't do it. I cannot play these games for months at a time. So when you pick one of these games, I mean, you play these like RPGs and stuff like Dungeon Mesh or something where it takes like a long time to play, but I mean, you're playing. The games like this, it's just like, It does remind me of a BBS game in a lot of ways.
It does.
When you're like, you'd play, it's okay, I played my turns for the day. I can understand a BBS, but in my browser where it's always open, I should be able to play it all the time. And I can't handle it anymore, man. I just can't do it.
I will close on this. The time invested into a game like this, Cookie Clicker, Candy Box. Candy Box has a sequel as well that I haven't dabbled with, but I've heard it's just as good.
Is it Polymorphic 3D?
No, for it's not. All right. It's not. Polygonal.
Whatever. Polymorphic's better.
For me, it is a calculation of time invested versus entertainment rewarded. I don't count my game. I don't count the time when it is running in the background as time invested because it's doing its own thing. I don't have anything to do with it. But when I get to a game, Candy Box more so than Cookie Clicker. Cookie Clicker is more trying to get all the achievements at this point. But Candy Box, I can let it run in the background and then invest 5 minutes of time and get rewarded for that time. And then I'm done with it. And if you calculate it like that, I think this is a lot of value for time invested.
Well,
and that's something that, for me, that's the way I look at this game. And that's, I think, why I enjoyed it so much.
Well, the price is right as well.
Exactly.
Anyone can play. I guess you can play it on your phone or
you
whatever.
You can, yeah.
We did get a review on this, Brent, if you're interested in hearing
what absolutely
our good buddy Pajaco had to say here. Pajaco chimes in. He says, Candy Box. And that's how he wrote it. I started playing, was really thinking Brent was pushing the whole character graphics thing a bit far with just some text on screen. But then things got interesting. Should I throw more candy on the floor or eat it? Who knows? The candy merchant, who appears to look like Tom Baker's Doctor Who, and offered to sell me a lollipop. And then before I knew it, I had a sword, hacked my way through a forest, butchered my way through the Goblin Mountain, and massacred my way through an underwater cave. And all while farming more lollipops and eating enough candy to give me diabetes. Oh, and I met a quizzical frog, a sorceress, and found a wishing well, and I'm still going. I still can't quite crack the castle, but I'm almost there. The game is an idle game, like Paperclips, but I love it, and have been picking up my phone way more than I normally do to check on things. I'm determined to see the end of this game, if there is one. For something that is all I ask you characters, it crams a lot of life, and it's really compelling to me. And will eat it will eat up a lot of my time over the next few days, I'm sure. I would highly recommend this to anyone. You don't really need any skill, and it's all about trying things out and pushing your luck a little. 9 out of 10. And I will say, Pac-Billy chimed in to mention that the ASCII picture that looked like Doctor Who is almost certainly Oscar Wilde, and which is
very true.
By the way, Tom Baker looked a lot like Oscar Wilde.
yeah. Kind of goes hand in hand.
So
absolutely.
There you go. There's your look at. I mean, listen again. I'm not killing your game. It's just I wasn't there, man. I couldn't handle. I can't handle another way's clicking games.
Well, you don't click, you know. But that's cool,
you know. And it is. I will say, I will give it this. Before we close on, at the beginning of it, when you're just throwing around candy,
yeah,
one of the options are like buy a life bar, buy like a title, you know, a screen up the top of the screen, like you're actually buying chunks of the game.
Well, yeah, and you unlock dark mode, so you can reverse the colors.
Oh yeah,
so, yeah, it's,
there you go.
It's kind of hidden things like that. Aaron, what did you bring to the table?
Well, I didn't bring anything, to be honest with you.
There you go.
The meal was brought to me. I just sat there. So, you know, doing the character, and I was trepidatious going into this one because right off the top of my head, I couldn't think of anything that would be interesting in this area. And then I got a note from our good buddy, Pac-Billy. Now, Pac-Billy, aside from being a handsome man and a great singer, he also knows a little bit about gaming. I don't know if you knew that. By the way, he has a podcast in the Pod Jam, which I mentioned that, so go check him out. But Pac-Billy's like, listen, I've got the game for you. Like, don't do any research. Don't do it. I've got it. He's like, don't look around. Here's your lock, your stone cold lock for character graphics games. I'm like, well, what is it, Pac? And he's like, bam. It's Digioli.
I'm glad you had to pronounce that first because I didn't have a clue.
Digiloy. Let's go with that. Digiloy. Digiloy. Digiloy.
It's a lot of vowels.
It's a lot of, listen, triple word score. So I was like, I got to check this out. So Digiloy, a game for the C64 and the Plus 4, believe it or not. Released December 27th of 2018 by a fellow named Tiro Heikkinen. Nothing's easy for me. Tiro Heikkinen, but his I'm going to call him by his cool guy name, Dr. Terrors.
Fair enough.
So Dr. Terrors is a guy who's done, he's dabbled a lot in demo scenes and like in graphic scenes. He's done a couple games on the C64, including Fort Django and Lele Relay. Fort Django was interesting because it was basically a Petsky based game with for the Petsy's parts were in the background and in sprites in the foreground. It's like a cowboy game.
Sure.
And so that one, I thought, and so he said, well, listen, I'm going to go the full route. And so he made this game, Digiloy, which is entirely in Petsky graphics. Now, you may be asking yourself, the Brent, like, Petsky graphics, what the heck is that? Well, you've got your ASCII,
yep,
right, and you've got your Petsky. So Petsky graphics were graphics that you could use that would basically were built into the PET and the C64 that you could use the keyboard to make these little symbols. And you can also make the reverse of the symbols. Mm-hmm. Plus, you've got all the characters that are on a normal keyboard. So just basically little graphics chunks that you can use to program with or make graphics with. And these have been sort of a staple of Commodore. You know,
absolutely. Yeah.
You know, the VIC has them. Everybody's got them. The characters are 8x8, and you can have two colors. They can have a background color and a foreground color. That's it. So if you think about that, you've got limited choices, to say the least. So with all that said, when you see a game entirely comprised of these, it's an action game, you're probably thinking to yourself, I don't know about this. So Dr. Terrors did the music and the graphics. Now, I found one area where someone also credited a guy for graphics named Igor Erizkin. But I only found that in one place. So I'm giving this guy credit if he worked on the graphics. If not, Dr. Terrors can tell me.
He can do it. He did it all.
The last thing you want to do is piss off a guy named Dr. Terrors. this was a public domain game, of course. It does allow a joystick and is a game where you take on the role of a guy with a gun, a space guy. He's the from what I can tell, because guess what? I found zero in the realm of backstory, yeah, including going to Dr. Terror's own blog to get the scoop. Dr. Terror's doesn't get into the backstory. So as far as I could tell, your goal in this game is to defeat an invading alien force and destroy their evil mechanized doom machine by putting three different keys into it to make it like melt down. You can tell right away when you load this up that Dr. Terrors is a whiz with the art and with Petsky art, because this isn't like most games. I've never quite seen a game. I've seen games that use Petsky art to do stuff, but not to this degree, because these are huge, chunky guys that are running around the screen, and they're in an action game. You would think to yourself, what kind of action game could you make with Petsky graphics? Well, I'm going to pay this game the highest compliment I can in that, after I played this for about 15 seconds, I totally forgot the fact that it was ASCII, and it was just like a game.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to sit here and say it was the best game ever played, but it felt like an actual game and not some wacky demo gimmick that some goof put together.
Right.
Like, you're running, you're jumping, you're avoiding stuff. It felt like a game. So when you start, you've got your guy with his gun, and at the bottom of the screen, you've got a health bar and a score. The health bar, you occasionally come across these little, they look like little metal containers that have a plus one on them. When you run across these things, they will give you plus one health unless you're maxed out. The goal of this game, as we mentioned, is to get keys. It's an interesting way he does this to Brent, because you've got several screens that go from left to the right, but you've always got one of the screens will be like a screen that has like a doorway or a portal in it. When you go through this, you sort of go into the background, a la like a lot of the ZX Spectrum adventure games that have done that. That's what this sort of reminded me of. And even Dr. Terror has even mentioned that this had the feel of a ZX game, and it does in a lot of ways, like a more colorful version. But when you go into the background, then you've got another set of screens that you go through, maybe three or four screens. I don't know if this is a limitation, just the way he decided to do it, but it works quite nicely. This is a game where you hit the button to shoot. You use up on the joystick to jump if you've got a problem with that. And not only did Dr. Terrors do all the graphics the entire game, he did all the music. The music's quite fitting. This game strikes a pretty cool guy mood. The colors are purples and greens and blacks. You know, they're grays. They have a nice they set a nice mood for what you're into here. The character you play, I found him fairly nimble when it comes to jumping. I mean, I didn't think that the jumps weren't pixel perfect. They were fine. They were not difficult to do. The hit detection I found to be pretty good. And when it wasn't good, it was in your favor good.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
For example, the enemies in this range from these guys that just run. They just run back and forth, their hands up in the air.
Yeah.
Remember, what was that game, Serious Sam?
Yes.
These bad guys, they just run up and scream. That's what they reminded me of. And they just ran back and forth. I thought, what are these guys doing? They're horrible soldiers.
Yes.
But you've got those guys that just run around. Then you've also got other guys with guns that run around. Then you've got UFOs that run around. Then you've got UFOs that drop bombs that run around. But the worst enemy in the game are these hopping ships. They can't be destroyed, and they just bounce around. And if you hit one, they die, but it hurts you, you know, substantially. And they're tough to deal with, and they're in a few key elements of the game involve you getting around these. But the hit detection, for example, when you're jumping through UFOs, sometimes you can get away with stuff that would probably normally hurt you. So I would call the hit detection not the worst. Not the best, but it's in your favor.
Right.
Usually when you shoot something, it dies. Sometimes you'll get away with not getting hit. This is a platform shooter because you're having to deal with multiple levels on the various screens. Usually it's like two, three levels. Not, you know, it's all in one screen.
Yeah, it's a flip screen game.
It's a flip screen game. And so... But the levels do join, and sometimes you'll have to jump on a level in one screen, run across it, and when you go to the next flip screen, you'll be able to jump to a higher level.
Right.
So there are, you know, they're joined up in a nice way. This is not a long game. I would call this, what would I call this? It's a full game. It's a completable game. I would call this something just north of a demo. This is a game that's just a very short game.
I'll agree with that.
And Dr. Terrors mentioned that he has a problem with like finishing stuff, you know. So I'm going to finish this sucker by making it, you know. I saw a run through where a guy beat it in 8 minutes. I didn't beat it in 8 minutes. It took me a lot longer because I got lost.
Beat it?
I did.
Well done.
Well, I mean, it took a while. I mean, it took longer than a game.
Did you cheat?
No, I didn't know you could cheat until later. Then I found someone made a trainer. When you stop, okay, so we've talked about the gameplay. But what you need to do in this game is load it up and stop and just look at what you're seeing. And because the game is so playable that sometimes you don't pay attention to what you're seeing. Because what you're seeing is a tour de force when it comes to manipulation of pesky graphics and color. This is a man who has spent years honing his craft. Me and Brent couldn't sit down and put something like this out, not even close. I mean, this is a guy who knows every aspect of the art form and every aspect of the color, and he can make it work. It's easy for games like this to look just texty. You know what I mean? It's easy for games like this to not be like it's so vast. And to not have the multiple backgrounds. This has you in tunnels. This has you outdoors. This has you in rooms with machinery. And if you take the time to look, it looks like, okay, I can tell these are trees. These are bushes, and the color scheme is set up so that it really the colors are part of the overall art form. And you've got to remember, every part of this are the pesky graphics, and he has to choose those specific colors. I'm not 100% sure what all the all the restrictions are, but I mean, I've seen enough of these to know that this is by far the best one I've ever seen using this sort of graphical flair. The sound effects are fine. It's got music and sound effects the whole game. You can turn off the music if you want. So that's a nice touch. And like I said, a guy who does this sort of art, you think to yourself, well, what kind of music is he going to do? I'll tell you what kind. Really good.
Yeah.
Dark, moody, demo-y music. You know, demo, I'm not the biggest demo scene guy. You know, we've got people in the chat now that are really into the demo scene. But you've got to respect these guys. How many great outfits have came from the demo scene? Tons of them. Those guys have a special techno-made style affinity for using these sorts of graphics, things that no one else thought to do. And this is the perfect example of someone that did that. Brent, what did you think of this? Had you ever played this one before?
Of course not.
I mean, people knew about it, just not us.
Yeah, no, I'd never heard it before. When I first loaded it up, and you get that title screen, and you're like, oh, that's a good title screen.
Yeah, it's really good.
That looks really good. Yeah. And then when you hit start, and you just control the guy and walk off, I was like, oh, that's impressive.
Yeah.
That's crazy impressive. I want to talk about the graphics first. Because, like you said, the coloring in this is out of this world.
Yeah.
It is so impressive what he can do with shading and really make you feel that things have corners. Things have rounded edges.
Yeah.
That thing looks sharp.
The fact that you said it had shading. It doesn't really have shading, but he makes the colors to make it look like shading.
Right.
Yeah.
The enemies that you fight in the game all have their own personality that you feel before you ever interact with them.
Yeah.
I believe that the people running around with their heads, their glowy heads,
they're just my favorite.
Hands up in the air. I think those might be frightened people. I think that was...
Is that why you're shooting them?
Well, I mean, if they run into you, they still hurt, I guess. But... The whole, because the other people are obviously soldiers, they're equipped in armor and they have guns. So I think that the running around guys are citizens.
They look like skullheads.
Oh, well, you know, you could be a skullhead guy and still be a citizen.
My skin's gone.
But anyway, the shading on this game really blew me away. The music and the sound effects, while good, I'm certainly not saying they're not good. When compared to the graphics, it's not even the same ballpark because the graphics are so incredible.
Yeah.
The game itself, the characters in the game are so large, you can only do so much on a screen before it fills up.
Yeah.
And which limits some of the tricky platforming or some of the big paddles that you could have, because you have five characters on the screen. That is the entire screen. That is 100% full from top to bottom. But what he's done in this game is really clever, and I don't know if you noticed this or not. The map only has one key card on it at a time. So you have to go, and the map is say, 20, 24 rooms, somewhere in that area. You have to go and find the key card, and your inventory only has one slot, so you have to take that key card and go to the machine and load it into the machine. And as you're going, that's like, consider that one level. Even though the game all takes place in the same 24 or so screens, consider that one level. If you kill an enemy, they stay dead, and when you put the key into the machine, everything in the world respawns.
Yeah.
And it respawns with more enemies. And that is how the difficulty of the game scales. So you have to go now find key two. Kill all the enemies. The enemies stay dead when you put in key two. Key three will appear somewhere in the world. All the enemies come back. And there are more of them on the screen. I thought that was a very clever way of doing it.
It's your classic Metroidvania.
Well, no, it's nothing like
that. Sorry, I just wanted to pretend I was on Pixel Gaiden for a minute.
Yeah, it's absolutely nothing like that. But it makes for a fun adventure. Now, I didn't play this long enough to beat it. I got killed multiple times looking for Key 2. Because it actually took me a while to realize how the game was doing, how it was when you put in Key 1, it respawns the world.
Yeah.
So I kept looking for new areas and wasn't getting anywhere. But now I know. Did
the same thing.
I could probably, if I spent a little more time with that, I could probably go back and pick it up and finish it.
It took me forever to find any of the keys. Once I did it, I had to remember where I, because I mean, they just sort of fall out of the sky.
Well, basically. They're in the same sometimes place every there. Time.
And sometimes, yeah, but sometimes I just don't see them. They just come down.
Well, yeah, because there's only one key in the world at a time. So I appreciate this game because of the graphics. And that's not a knock on the game. That's an appreciation of the graphics. But if it wasn't for the amazing things he did with the graphics, this isn't going to be something I would play over and over and over. But considering that he did these impressive things with this graphical style, to the extent that he did it, I think it's something people should play, should look up, and give. You're not going to, this isn't going to become your new favorite game, but to appreciate what Dr. Terrors did, you really need to see it in action, play it, and feel it for yourself.
Remember the game that we covered on R. Sinclair, Sephoria? Was that what it was called?
Seraphinia.
Of course, totally different game. But this, I had the same sort of feeling. I thought to myself, this is something I've never seen before.
Yes.
You know, and it's also playable, you know. Again, then, you know, you're right. I agree with pretty much everything you said. This isn't the game that's going to blow your mind, but it's going to blow your mind, but not the gameplay of it.
Right.
The gameplay's fine. And if he was to flesh this out, I have no doubt that if Dr. Terrors took the notion, he could crank out a huge game with these. I mean, he's got the jack. I can't imagine what it takes to render these screens, how long it would take, you know. But, I mean, he's definitely the guy with talent. Just a couple quick things I had written in here. So, why is he called Dr. Terrors? Hero Wonder?
Okay.
I went over to his blog. He said he was going to a demo thing called Zoo 13, so I guess 2013, and he had to have a handle. So he goes, in the proud tradition of old school demo scene, the handle has to have a Z or an X, and doctor seemed like a good prefix. So he went with doctor. That's where he got the doctor.
There you go.
He also mentioned that he actually has a doctorate in real life. He got it in 2013, and he's from Finland. So if you're interested in that, and he's a Finn. In the fine tradition of great folks from Finland. I want to mention that actually people did review this game aside from our people. The Lemon 64 gives us an 8.8. C64 Scene Database gives us a 9.9. Retro Gamer Magazine gives us an 86. But this is the most cryptic of the bunch. And I couldn't find this article to read it. And so someone maybe could fill me in somewhere down the line. Zap Annual, or it's two Z's in Zap. Gave this, I read this on his blog from him. Apparently, they put this over quite nicely. They thought it was a really beautiful game. Then they dropped a 44% on it. Bam.
Whoa.
They dropped a hammer on it. And I saw this also mentioned in one of the Lemon 64 comments. It's like, yeah, I don't know what they were thinking.
That's harsh. Harsh.
44%? What do you want?
That's someone who
make a pesky game in 2018. Say you do.
Yeah, no, that's someone who doesn't understand what they're looking at.
Well, you know, you never know with these people. We did get a few reviews here, Brent, from our usual suspects. If you'll indulge me here, so starting out, of course, Pac-Billy chimed in. You'd think he would. He says, this is a great, fun, easy on the eyes, and buttery smooth game to play. My main criticism is that the player and enemy chunkiness required to depict a level of detail with character graphics sometimes makes for a cramped play field.
Yeah.
But more often than not, the game seems to account for this and delivers a rollicking good time. One control qualm, up to jump, means you may wind up traversing a doorway when you intended to leap out of harm's way. Going to the door also clears you from danger most of the time, so it's usually inconsequential. still, it's something to be aware of. I didn't have that happen all that much.
I had to have it a couple of doorways
were pretty much clear. My last issue is they throw a number of health canisters at you early in the game before you really need them. Backtracking to pick them up, I couldn't quite figure out the factors determining why some enemies had respawned and others hadn't. Maybe they reset after you passed through a set number of doorways. Not a big deal. Just keep alert when you go back for your precious health. By the way, Pac-Boy does touch on something. You do find health scattered all over the place, and you absolutely don't want to get it.
You're not picking it up because you can't pick it up.
You'll be going that way again. Yeah,
you can pick it up even when your health is full and it just is wasted.
Ultimately, those are minor quibbles. Overall, the game stands as a stellar execution of groundbreaking ideas that paved the way for more recent titles like Monstro Giganto. I got to play that. Dr. Terrors emerged from the pesky art scene, and his experience in bringing this sort of game to the world, the limited graphical arsenal, is evident from the first screen. That's true. We also had a look at this from our good buddy, Pajaco, who chimes in. A few seconds into this bad boy, and you forget you're playing a C64 game. It actually feels more like an Atari 2600 game in a weird way. But that said, this is technically very impressive. Everything looks amazing. The shapes and colors do not look like pesky characters. They look like graphics. The sound effects and music are good, if a little basic, but it all works well together, and everything runs at a good pace, making this a very playable game. It is a little tricky in places due to the limited screen real estate, and sometimes, despite trying your best, you will take damage no matter what. One change I would make would be to use down to go through the doors. A few times I went through a door, tried to jump up, shoot a baddie, and went back through the door, because up is go through the door and jump. Yeah, there it is again.
No.
There you go. When two or three people say it, then that's something. Ultimately, while the game itself is fairly simple, it can be completed in about 10 minutes when you get good. For me, it felt like the point wasn't to make it an award-winning retro game, but moreover, to prove this could be done and prove it in a big way. Fun for a couple of hours and totally worth your time to check out. 9 out of 10 for doing something awesome that I haven't really seen before.
Yeah.
So I think those are both ringing endorsements of that game. I think both games brought a lot to the table. Even if your game wasn't necessarily my cup of tea in terms of the way you play it, it is a clever game. I've got to give the guy credit. It's funny. This is another one where I never even heard of this game from France, you know, whatever. And I wonder how big it is. Was this a big deal all over the world, or just it was a big?
No, it was big. It was big. It got a lot of mainstream appeal when it came out.
Beautiful. Well, with all that said, my friend, we might as well go ahead and talk about what's coming up on ARG Presents. There's only one way to do that.
A little bit of the wheel?
You got that right. Let's spin this sucker. So this week we've added two games here. I'm going to explain one of these, Brent.
Okay. Hands off the wheel. I got it.
This piece, and we'll get more into it if it ever spins up. Games Touch by Dean Bent. If you're a big Dean Bent fan, and Dean Bent is a fan because he's the one who gave me the idea.
Dean Bent.
Dean Bent. And then our retro piece this week is the Game Boy Advance. Everybody knows the Game Boy Advance.
You ready?
I'm ready
to give this thing,
fire that thing
a
out.
Monster spin.
Go for it. And the winner is, what do you got there? The winner, multi-genre games from Graham W. Vepke. So these are games that have, I guess within the game, have multiple genres within the same
Absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely. I already know what I'm picking.
Already you
yes.
picked one?
Bam.
Man, I got no idea. I've got to go.
Graham, I can only imagine that you thought of this subject, so I would play this certain game, so I'm going to do it for you.
Pack Billy, see me later. I'll come up with another one. Now, Brent, I believe next week we're back on the Coco Show. It will be coming up next week.
So well, I can look it up for you, Aaron.
While you're looking it up, I want to talk real quick. And I wanted to bring this up to at the end of the show. I didn't want to bring anybody down, but I just wanted to mention, you know, in case you haven't heard, we had our mother passed away a couple weeks ago, and it was a real, of course, it was horrible. But I will say, I want to acknowledge everyone that sent a note or a message Dropped a comment on the video, anything that you did to, send your condolences to us. And I saw all of these. I tried to respond to everyone that I saw. And I mean, I was surprised. It was overwhelming the amount of kind words and comforting words that were sent our way. And I conveyed them to the brand, all the nice things people said. And listen, we're very fortunate and you hear this all the time, but I mean, we can say without hesitation, like, we've got a great bunch of friends out there who are kind people, and we don't take you for granted. We appreciate that you guys would reach out to us. I mean, I can't get into the number of messages that I got.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe it, you know?
The show of support was overwhelming, and we do appreciate
it. Yeah, and we're going to try to keep the ball rolling. And today was our first step back in, trepidatiously. Granted, our first step was we tumbled
big old,
down.
Big old mud hole.
But we're going to keep the ball rolling. But I wanted to say something about that because it really meant a lot to me. Absolutely. And it meant a lot to Brent as well. Now, with all that said, what'd you find out about the Coco Show?
The Coco Show, we will be looking at Gatecrashers.
Gatecrashers.
Nominated by Steve R.
Do you know that one? I don't know that one.
Not just from the name, no.
So there you go. Next week, we'll be taking out Gatecrashers on the Coco Show. Hey, just a couple things we want to touch base with. You know, it's coming up quick. Just in less than 2 months, right? April, May. Yeah. It's Boat Fest 2024. This will be June, I think it's 14th, 15th, and 16th, if I'm not mistaken, the weekend. And it's going to be quite a happening. We've already sold more tickets than we've sold any of the other previous Boat Fest. We're pretty good, man. And we're going to have a lot of fun this year. Aside from the fact that you're going to have your usual shows and buddies from our channel, you're going to have people, like really big-time players from other channels are going to be there. Frank from Richard Rewind and his staff are going to be there. They're going to be doing repairs. If you come just to get your stuff repaired, you're going to come out of this way ahead just on shipping. You can just bring I'm dead serious, man. Yeah. People will just bring their stuff to Frank, and he'll give it back to you by the end of the weekend if he can get it done. Frank he got almost everything done. I think everything last time.
Yeah, he did a lot of
last
work.
Two times. We were also going to have Brent's big auction. This thing's going to be a monster. I was surprised how big it was last year, you know, and it's going to be bigger.
And hopefully we're going to get a little more streamlined this year.
I doubt.
Although we popped off pretty quick last year, but we're hoping to roll it a little faster.
I think it went real well last year, and this year is going to be another monster. So there's plenty of reasons. We're going to be finalizing the schedule and finalizing all the stuff on the feature table within the next couple of weeks. I've been talking to Boat about it. The last couple of weeks, obviously, have been tough to deal with. Plus, the boat's been constantly on tour as well. So we just haven't been around to finalize this stuff. But I'd say the next couple of weeks, we'll be taking it to the house. So I hope you'll join us for Boat Fest this year. It should be a lot of fun. That's our next big event. Oh, I also want to thank everyone that participated in last weekend's International Computer Club. Get this, the Brent. We went 5 big hours on that bad boy, but this was far and away the most viewed International Computer Club we've ever done.
Yeah, that's good.
It was the second biggest event we've had this year on the channel, and it was it got over real well. It was real popular. So if you haven't caught it, head over to Amigos Retro Gaming channel on YouTube and check it out. It was a lot of fun. And also, I want to thank Rob Flack O'Hara. I interviewed him on the Disaster Stream Friday night. If you're interested in catching that interview, that's also on the channel. It'll be coming up on the podcast feed this week for your audio listening pleasure. We'll probably release that around Wednesday. And that was a lot of fun. Flax, all you had to do is turn the microphone on and point at him. And he goes, brother. So it was a lot of fun. If you got anything, Brent, you want to talk about before we take this thing to the house?
Nope.
All right. We'll see you guys next week for the Coco Show. And until then,
what?